Hello, and welcome to We Speak CVE, a free podcast from the CVE program. On this podcast, we'll talk with people from the cybersecurity community about what else, cybersecurity and vulnerability management, and the CVE catalog of vulnerabilities. If you didn't know, the CVE program's mission is to identify, define, and catalog publicly disclosed cybersecurity vulnerabilities.
Hello and welcome to the CVE Programs Podcast. I'm Shannon Sabins, your host, a CVE board member, and I have with me some special guests today. I met these guests at VulnCon a couple of weeks ago, VulnCon in Raleigh, North Carolina. Was a collaboration of the CVE program and FIRST. This was a small but very excellent conference. We hope that it's going to grow. We'll be back next year. But I want to allow my guests who I met there to introduce themselves. They had a presentation at VulnCon that I really enjoyed, and I want to talk to them and tell you, our listener, about it. Edwards and Benberg, introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, I'm Ben Edwards. I am, who am I? So currently, I think my title, we'll go with that to start with, is Principal Research Scientist at BitSight. Prior to that, I worked at Scientia, and mostly what I do is kind of public research. I've been swimming in vulns for, I don't know, a few years now, 5 or 6 years now. I've contributed to EPSS, contributed to the new CVSS v4 score, and generally just, I like CVEs. I like frameworks. I like them all. I like the data that comes with them. And so it was really great to go to VulnCon and meet a bunch of people who were like-minded. I would also not call it small. I mean, it was for the first conference, I think there was something like 360 attendees and like 250 online. It seemed big to me. There was a lot of Vuln interest.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I liked that it wasn't a huge conference. I really enjoyed getting to spend more time with, you know, with that group. And I think you're right. For a first conference, it was very good sized.
Much better than like an RSA, which is just overwhelming.
Exactly. I enjoyed that it, you know, going to a conference that, not that I don't enjoy RSA or I don't enjoy Black Hat, but I really enjoyed going to a conference that wasn't that. Yeah. Sander Vinberg, tell us about yourself.
Hi, everybody. My name is Sander Vinberg, and I manage a team of security researchers at BitSight. I'm actually very new to BitSight. Until about a month ago, I was working on a threat research team at F5, and that team was called F5 Labs. And I was actually working on that team when Ben and I did this research. And so I've been really kind of grateful that both BitSight and F5 have been really, really supportive about us getting out and sharing this research with a lot of folks. So I spent the last 5 years kind of similar to what Ben was doing, but with a little bit more emphasis on threats, but essentially producing public-facing security research for people to consume. So I've done a lot of work on vulnerabilities and vulnerability intelligence. I also published a report last year about identity threats like credential stuffing, phishing, MFA bypass. Before that, I did a lot of work on ransomware, kind of around the beginning of the pandemic when ransomware was really hitting. And now I'm just getting my feet under me at BitSight, and I'm, for the first time, Ben and I are actually working at the same organization, which is really great. And at least I'm enjoying it. I don't know, I'll let Ben say whether he's enjoying it.
I mean, it does make slacking with you easier because I don't have to find a different workspace, all that stuff. I can just find you in my DMs.
Yeah.
Did I ask the two of you how you met each other?
We actually met at a community within the broader security community known as CIRA, or the Society of Information Risk Analysts. And in 2019, shortly after I had joined F5 Labs, an old friend of mine and a mentor of mine who's been a member of the CIRA community for a long time, he said, "Hey, I know you are interested in the intersection of data science and security. You got to come to this conference. It's nothing but data science for security and risk management, which was CIRCON. This is 2019. It was hosted in Cincinnati. And I went to this thing, and it would only be a slight exaggeration to say that it kind of changed the trajectory of my security career, because that was one of the first times that the Scientia folks rolled out EPSS and the research behind prioritization of prediction, which was a series that they did with Kenna for a while. And I met Ben, I met Jay Jacobs, and that really was when I started really working to try to become a halfway decent data scientist. And so Ben and I kept in touch after that. We saw each other at RSA a couple months later, and I think we spent a long time talking about French philosophy over beers. And then it kind of just took off from there, and we were lucky enough to work together on a few projects, and here we are.
You're my people. I love it. So let's talk about how we met. I met the two of you at VolCon, and you had a presentation that I kind of stumbled into based on its title. Tell me the title of your presentation. Tell the people the title of your presentation.
So this one, it was kind of a we were kind of putting it out there to hopefully attract people like you. So the full title is CVE is the worst vulnerability framework, except for all the others. And then, the history nerds among you will recognize that as a Winston Churchill quote from 1947, which is basically the real quote is, "No one pretends that democracy is perfect or all wise. Indeed, it has been said that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all those other forms that have been tried from time to time." And in the course of the research, we really felt this resonated with CVE, because it was something where everybody complains about CVE, about whether it's, the data formats and how it's produced, or how CNAs interact with it, or all the associated frameworks like CVSS and CPE and CWE. But in Sander and I's experience, CVE is an incredibly good thing, because it gives us a piece of information, a way to communicate and rally around vulnerabilities and communicate effectively about them. And so, even though everybody complains about it, even though everybody thinks CVE is the worst, I mean, at least if my if you know LinkedIn is any indication, or maybe Mastodon, we actually think it's good, and it's better than everything else, and it's certainly better than the absence of any kind of vulnerability framework. And so I think we drew a pretty good crowd, I think, with that title, because everybody's like, oh, they're gonna trash CVE. And so I think they all came.
Yeah, you certainly got me. And I would say too, yeah, don't I know you have to have a pretty thick skin to be a CVE board member, and wake up every day and still want to make it work the program. Criticism is sort of an aspect of success in some sense. It's in some sense the program's successful, where after 25 years we're still going and we're trying to make it better and evolve the program. But it is a visible program, and it's not a perfect program. We're not perfect people, and we're just in there every day trying to make it trying to make it better and make a meaningful impact for other people. But we're a volunteer community, and we're by no means a perfect bunch.
Oh yeah. What's that old joke for programmers? There are two kinds of programming languages, ones people complain about and ones people use. Or wait, did I get that backwards?
Or I think it isn't it ones people complain about and ones that nobody uses?
Nobody uses, right? Yeah.
That's
We would
right.
wish there
That's
was ones
right.
nobody complained about and everybody used. But no, yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
That's
there
why
you
I
go.
have you folks around.
So you started this collaboration, I think, a year and a half ago or more. What was your vision at that time, and how did it evolve as you looked at CVE data?
Well, I think this is actually kind of one of the most fascinating things about it. And I think it's important to understand this in light of of how, where this research has ended up, because when we first started doing this project, our assignment was to produce intelligence about vulnerabilities. That was what my team was doing at F5 at the time. And so we went into this with the intent of being able to tell people this kind of vulnerability is getting worse, this kind of vulnerability is getting better, this is what the entire body of CVEs looks like. And so the original report that we published, which is still available at f5labs.com, it's called the Evolving CVE Framework. Is that original document was a little bit more kind of tactically focused around kind of where our CVE is going. But as we were doing that research, we kept on kind of coming, we kept on stumbling upon weird anomalies and irregularities in the data. And so we gradually, over 4 or 5 presentations now and a couple different papers, we have sort of evolved this from, rather than deliver specific findings about CVEs, instead we're talking about the entire framework and sort of delivering what I would consider like meta findings or meta intelligence. And so we learned a lot more about the framework than I think we were able to extract really sort of actionable intelligence about particular CVEs. And so the we've kind of gone up a level of abstraction, but in so doing, I feel like we've also kind of, especially right now with everything that's going on with MVD, I feel like we sort of managed to stumble into kind of what is the heart of the discussion about vulnerabilities and how we communicate about them.
I want to talk a little bit about, some, potential examples of the anomalies. And I also want to talk a little bit about how persons who feel and find themselves very close to the program and close to the data, and deeply engaged, in the vulnerability space. Again, you're my people. And, and how we differently how we took different things away, from how we d often take different things away from the data, that don't make anything wrong, that don't make anybody wrong, but just, we observe different things from our particular angle.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of building on what Sander said. One of the things that we discovered as we went through, and we're trying to kind of build a little bit of a history of what CVE had looked like and what CVE was currently looking like and continuing to grow. And we kind of broke it down into, I think, 5 categories. And basically, looking at CVE and the associated frameworks like CWE, the Common Weakness Enumeration, CPE, which is Common Product Enumeration, CVSS, of course, the Common Vulnerability Scoring System. We found these kind of 5 things that happened. So the first one is those frameworks make deliberate changes in how they do things. And this is, totally valid, as anybody who's done any kind of tech work knows. As you deploy something out in the world, as people start using it, you find out that you have to fix things. And those fixes come out as whatever kind of releases or new versions or bug fixes or whatever. But you have to fix the frameworks as they evolve. The second thing that we kind of noticed was that there were a number of changes that had happened in the data that were really I call them kind of shadow changes because they weren't announced, but they were a point where if you kind of looked at a snapshot of the data currently, even if that snapshot is a full history going back 25 years of CVE, if you had looked at that snapshot a year or 2 years earlier, data would be different. And that's because maybe about individual CVEs, we get some more information. And so we might change things, update a score, update some references. But the point is that the foundation is not always set. And when you kind of see data, it's not set forever. The next
Ben, if
thing
I
we
could,
noticed, yeah, go
sorry,
ahead, ma'am.
just to
Interrupt
kind
me.
of put like a concrete example to this, just so folks kind of know what we're talking about. An example of a deliberate change would be the framework opening up the CNA system around the end of 2016, so that more and more vendors could become CNAs and publish vulns on their own. So that's an example of like an open and deliberate public change. Whereas a shadow change would be that if you are clever about it, and Ben actually was able to kind of hunt this down by cross-referencing a few different sources, you can find times when the specific NVD entries have changed. And they actually do all the time. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of change. Most of the time, it's just adding more details or more references to the vulnerability listing. But those changes are not publicly tracked. So any
Oh no.
moment that you,
So
sorry.
the MVD ones are, it's the MITRE ones that aren't, that are
Oh, I'm
still like
sorry.
hundreds
Sorry.
of thousands of changes. But
Yeah,
still, I
MITRE.
mean, either way, right? There's just all of these insane changes that happen. Yeah.
Yeah, and unless you're digging for them, you're not going to see them, right? So at any
Yeah.
moment that you're looking up a specific vulnerability on either NVD or MITRE, what you're going to see is presenting itself as though it's been kind of that way the whole time. So that's just an example of the public obvious changes versus the shadow changes. Now, sorry, Ben, please continue.
No, it's all right. And I shouldn't say insane because you're right. When we looked into the NVD change log, most of the changes are things like changes to references, adding CPE configuration, so adding like vulnerable software and versions, and then changes to things like CWE. But there are still like hundreds or thousands of changes to stuff like CVSS scores, or various like who is responsible for this? Who is the actual vendor who's responsible for this? So a lot of those changes still exist in there. One of the actually, and I want to go back to the kind of deliberate changes that we talked about. I think one major one was CVSS, and there was this, switch from version 2 to version 3 when version 3 came out in 2016. This is important to me because also version 4 is now out, and it's starting to get some use. And the question is like, did the average like vulnerability has the average vulnerability gotten worse over time? And if you kind of track this average by CVSS 2 or 3, you might say, and without looking at which version you're actually using, you might have seen like a giant jump in 2016 where the average vulnerability was suddenly high severity instead of medium severity. And we've got a great a visual of this in the talk. Maybe we can throw it up when we throw up the YouTube channel. I'll definitely send it out. But basically, in 2016, the average CVSS v3 score has been about 7.3, whereas the average 2.0 scores have been about 6. And this isn't to say vulnerabilities have gotten worse in the last like 5 or 6 years. I think there's some subjective assessment that maybe that's the case. But the fact is, like, it's how we measure things, and we make those deliberate changes. You have to be aware of them if you're trying to track something like, are things getting worse over time? Are we prioritizing correctly by this thing? Are we building our capacity correctly? You have to be aware, and the way that you're measuring severity might have changed in the last 2 or 3 years, or might be coming for a big change with CVSS 4 coming out. So those deliberate changes are ones that I think, they can impact things quite a bit. And they happen in CWE, they happen with OWASP, they happen with CVSS. All the kinds of ways we mess with vulnerabilities, we can't just look at a snapshot today. We have to know the history a little bit. And that was definitely like a big point that we've had. The CNA process has certainly been a sea change that happened at the end of 2016 as well. Yeah.
Gosh, we said
And
a
then,
lot, and there are two different directions. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. There are
oh,
kind of
no,
two
it's
directions I want to go with that, but go ahead first, Sander.
so just sort of expanding on the types of these irregularities. What we also found were kind of three other types, which I'll just kind of briefly list. There we found that there are times where there's just subjective disagreements in terms of making kind of specific expert decisions about things like producing a CVSS score based on a vulnerability. So we found kind of irregularities in terms of just difference of opinion. We found irregularities that kind of resulted from differing incentives. So a CNA might have a different view about what a vuln in their own in a product that they're responsible for. They might view that really differently than an independent assessor. So we had subjective assessments, we had different incentives, and then there was also a very, very small number of cases where we actually saw evidence or opportunities for kind of malicious gaming of the system and people sort of poisoning the data in order to mislead people about vulnerabilities. So those were kind of all the different flavors of weirdness that we identified. But sorry, Shannon, tell me what you're thinking about this.
Well, I hear a lot different interpretations of the data, and we each come at it with our own with our through the lens of our own experience. And I think you're 100% correct. That as we evolve approach to be it CBE, CBSS, et cetera, that as we evolve approach, and we have to evolve approach as programs, these are sort of living natural bodies, right? As we evolve approach, it can shift the data. I continue to be fascinated by all the various interpretations that people have of the body of data based on their lenses. And sometimes, I hear a perception and I'm like, oh, that just strikes me as flat wrong. Or sometimes I hear different views into the data that I think, have some validity or just the things that I wouldn't have thought of. For myself, I spend a lot of where I have spent the most time with disclosure and close to CBE was, administering disclosures for a bug bounty, but also administering acquisitions by the bug bounty. So I come with very my approach is that I happen to come with very like an economic kind of lens with vulnerability reports and exploits as commodity. And even CBE itself, as an item, it's an unintended consequence of CBE that the CBE itself it becomes a thing of value,
Oh, that's fascinating.
right, to researchers. You collect CBEs and you have some number of CVEs as your belt under your belt, and I then see somebody interprets the data as well, we don't see so much of this kind of low-hanging fruit anymore. We're past those days when these sort of minor bugs were more prevalent, and I look at those questions as economic questions and say, well, have what the bounties are buying, shifted what we're seeing reporting on, and I believe that it has, and that's within my personal experience, but also, and I love CBSS too. I also note, the severity changes, but as you said, different parties come with different eyes, and so the vulnerability report holds a certain value to the research eye, holds a certain experience to we'll assume vendor eye for the sake of this conversation. And then if you're an entity that is helping organizations prioritize vulnerabilities for remediation, then you may tend toward the conservative side. So those three parties look quite differently at the data, in addition to CVSS itself having evolved. And as you said, as you evolve, the approach can shift the data. And again, these are living programs, if you will.
Yeah, I think that I mean you mentioned this when we spoke at VolCon. I was so happy that you mentioned the bug bounty because it was a whole sort of source of supply and demand around this that I just hadn't thought of and I hadn't thought about it in about a year. So it's something we'd really like to dig into and see if we can sort of identify any correlations between changes in demand for different kinds of vulns and which ones are getting published. So there's one plot that we had in the long talk that essentially showed the density of CWEs being assigned to new vulnerabilities in every quarter for the last 20 years or so. And we had found all these times in the early days in particular, when a single kind of vulnerability was dominating the space, right? So there was a point in like 2008 to 2010 when upwards of 50% of all the CVEs coming out were assigned a SQL injection CWE. And then after that, there was this period about 2011 to 2016 or so where cross-site scripting was the only game in town. And again, more than half, at some quarters, 60% of the volumes that were coming out were looking like cross-site scripting. And then right around the time, again, there's this kind of breakpoint at the end of 2016 when there was a new CWE view. So that had a huge impact, we think, on what CWEs were being assigned to people. But it was also when the CNA program really expanded. It's also when, as a result of these other changes, we just started to see way more vulnerabilities getting published. And so, in the wake of all these changes happening at the same time, what we saw was a huge increase in the diversity of CWEs, of weakness types, being assigned to CVEs. And we kind of just we explained that by saying, oh, well, we know that they have made all these changes to the framework. And so when you give people more sort of options to assign a vulnerability, then you get more options showing up. And in making that sort of assumption, we totally bypass the fact that there are forces pushing and pulling on this market, and that people don't sort of discover vulnerabilities like, I don't know. They don't just kind of walk out and stumble on them like mushrooms in their garden, right? It's like they're hunting for these things, and they hunt for a certain type and a certain type of software, and it's a business for folks. So yeah, I was really glad you mentioned that, because I feel like tactically, it's something that we should have looked into. But in the big picture, it seems to me like another example of these kinds of discontinuities hiding in plain sight, and it's something that we really look forward to chasing down a bit.
Yeah, for me, the economics of this market is absolutely fascinating. I'm in a different role today, but this remains fascinating to me from an economic perspective. Where something's prevalent, it has a lesser value, right? And where something's rare, it has a considerably greater value. So, do we not see something because it's rare? Or do we not see something because it's prevalent and therefore of a lesser economic value? That I think is fascinating. But I said I kind of wanted to take this in two different directions. So let's go maybe for a moment in the second direction, which is you were talking about how records were constructed and perhaps some of the shortcomings of the records or where information may be potentially updated. There were a couple of things when we talked about when we kind of did our pre-call for the podcast that I wanted to raise here. And the question that I had asked you was, what do you wish CVE would do differently, or what do you think is our biggest miss? Where can we help CNAs do a better job here, right? And you said some interesting things to me, and I kind of want to dig into those as adjacent to the things that we've just said.
Yeah, so for me, like as a data nerd who's going to pull down the entirety of the MITRE data and look compare it to NVD and look at open source DB and try to kind of correlate all of these things through CVE, the thing that I want most in the world for CVE is completeness. There's this CVE version 5 JSON schema that's out. This is what MITRE and the CVE board says. When you're a CNA and you're publishing a CVE, this is the format you're going to have it in. There's a great GitHub repository that does like hourly releases of the whole dump of everything. And it's this really vast, well, not vast, but it's a pretty big CVE or JSON schema that includes just about every framework that's ever been conceived of for vulnerabilities. So there are, the ones we've already talked about, CWEs, CPEs, CVSS, There's room for potentially other metrics in there. There's other ways to measure versions. So like MITRE has this thing called, it has a section called versions, which is kind of an alternative to CPE. There are these things called CAPEX, which are kind of like, they were proto attack. It was like a proto attack framework. That's included in there. There's data for exploits. There's data for workarounds and solutions. There's data for, is this a configuration problem? But the issue that I come across is I pull this data down and I see the schema and I get really excited. And then I look at the data and most of this stuff isn't filled in. And so like in particular with NVD kind of working at a lower capacity as it seems to be, we're going to have to look for alternative sources for what versions did this vulnerability affect? What is the severity here? And if you look at kind of the MITRE data, which is where the vulns are coming out from the CNAs, it's often incomplete. So I did a little bit of analysis on this, interestingly enough, and only about two-thirds of vulnerabilities in the last few months have had CVSS data. The rest of that has come through, MITRE, or I'm sorry, through NVD actually scoring things, if there's a CVSS score. Same thing, versions are a little bit better. About 80% recently have had version information, 75 to 80%. But almost all of that is in this version format and not CPE. So what I would really like the most is to like force CNAs, for me to be a dictator and to be able to tell CNAs, you have to include all this information before you submit, or we're gonna like reject your CVEs. I also understand that is totally untenable in like a federated process, right? So the only way that we can scale to actually all the vulnerabilities that actually get discovered and reported and are potentially risky for organizations, is to have it, federated out, for organizations, for vendors to be able to kind of control their own if they want to, for kind of having clearing houses like HackerOne, VolDB, GitHub. They're all CNAs that can handle kind of large projects or like open source who'd want to become their own CNAs. To be able to scale like that, you got to kind of allow people some leeway, and you can't be a dictator. But that would be what I want from a data perspective. And this isn't just selfish. I think that if we want to be able to draw long-term conclusions about where risk is being concentrated, for example, how incentives are changing, like we talked about with bug bounties and what kind of vulns people are going after, we have to be measuring it, and we have to be measuring it in the long term to understand if the changes we're seeing are noise or if they're real. And I think that that's a big challenge right now, is getting that complete information, getting CNAs. I think everybody is getting better at it, but it's still, not perfect. And so that's what I would hope for. That would be my wish. I think we have the frameworks. We just got to kind of use them completely. And this is also like, allow for alternatives. So EPSS is something I've worked on. It's really great. They are a great candidate for something like an authorized data provider, which there's room for in the CVE 5 schema. Other things like SSVC, all of those kind of other frameworks, I'd love to see CNAs start incorporating. And you get a few of the big ones. We've noted that the big CNAs like Microsoft, VolDB, MITRE, HackerOne, if these folks start employing those other frameworks and releasing them, that's a large chunk of the data. And hopefully we can get some more adoption so we can identify these long-term trends. That would be my hope.
So I love very much, and I smiled when you said if I could be a dictator. This is definitely a challenge for the program in that we want to enable CNAs to kind of meet us where they are. We want to make it easy for people to become part of the program. And we could lose them if we put too many we don't want to make it
Obstacles.
unattainable. We want to make the program accessible for CNAs and have a bar that everyone can meet.
It's
That
economics again, right? Like the value of being a CNA, if it's outweighed by the burden of it, people aren't going to do it, right? Incentives.
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. You're very right. But as people, as entities join the CVE program, they do, mature in their process as they go along. And you mentioned NVD and funding at the NVD, and a lot of people are very upset and they don't know, how do we begin to sort of compensate and have, high quality enriched records. But you also talked about, JSON 5, and I think a lot of people don't realize today how very capable with the JSON 5 schema, how extensible the CVE are, the CVE records of today, can be, and you can add a lot more to those CVE records to flow downstream. And you mentioned ADPs, authorized data publishers. There is, opportunity for some organizations to become enrichers of CVE data. But it is possible today. There is a structure, within which people can enrich that data. CNAs can enrich that data to the maximum of their, of their capabilities, and I believe that that will grow. And for anybody who's used CVSS before, that is a bit of a learning curve. But I absolutely love CVSS. I think it's a really helpful tool. I think CVSS is a great, when CNAs do it. But I do think there can be a learning curve, and we're meeting people where they are, and they're growing with the program.
And I think that's been so apparent given the number of specifically like open source projects who have joined who've joined the CNA program. So there was Curl recently. I mean, there was some like kind of internet drama around that, right? Like there was this vulnerability that one of the maintainers didn't feel like it was a good vulnerability. But there was really a lot of good that came out of that in that they decided, hey, we would like to be in a little bit more control of the vulnerability process for our piece of software. And to be fair, they know their software more than anybody else. So they became a CNA. There was a similar kind of kerfluffle about the Linux kernel becoming a CNA. And they were kind of saying, well, lots of bugs are vulnerable, or just about all bugs are potential vulnerabilities. So maybe we'll mark a lot of CVEs. Like every time we do a bug fix, it'll be a CVE. And so that, there's going to be these changes of where, again, incentives change. The incentive for a maintainer is going to be different than the incentive for, a vendor. Is there going to be different than, a threat researcher? But it's important that we can all measure this stuff, and have it out there and have that open process, like you said, so people can participate and we can kind of come to hopefully what's going to be a middle ground where we all agree on what the correct information is. Because even though all these frameworks have rubrics and extensive documentation about how things are supposed to be scored and what's supposed to be where, and if anybody's looked at the CWE website, the description of every weakness is pages and pages. There's this need for us to kind of still coalesce on best practices because you can only document so much before kind of the rubber hits the road. And so I think it's great that all these things are kind of increasing and getting out there. We have different stakeholders coming in that are going to provide different perspectives. And I hope it continues to grow.
Any parting words?
Yeah, this project, you noted a little while ago that we've sort of been working on this for more than a year and a half at this point, and it's been really sort of interesting for me to watch how my own perception of vulnerability management and vulnerability disclosure has changed as a result of really going under the hood and looking at this system. And I went into this. I mean, I'm gonna kind of just echo what Ben was saying, but I went into this looking at CVE from the outside as though it was a big mess. And obviously it's really important, and I knew it was important the whole time, but I mostly what I saw was the mess and the misunderstandings between different stakeholders and stuff. And the more we dug into it, the more absolutely critical it became. And by the time we shipped that first report, I was sort of filled with gratitude and appreciation for all the people that made those early decisions. And even though we have since amended all those decisions and we're trying to make it a little bit better for the future that we've kind of grown into, I suppose the parting word would be when all these things, all these weird irregularities that we've identified, we sort of are doing this with a huge amount of respect and appreciation for the early founders who were trying to solve a problem that I don't think they were designing for the for what we have today with 200,000 CVEs and going climbing every day. So yeah, that really sort of brings us back around to this idea of it is a deeply flawed vulnerability framework, and it is still way, way better than all the others. And
I hear you. Oh, go ahead.
the only thing I tack onto that is if you do have complaints, if it is not fitting your use case, get involved. We, you know, almost every bit of the CVE and associated frameworks has some sort of, you know, ability to communicate. Lots of the meetings are open. You can join the CVSS SIG, you can join the EPSS SIG. We want feedback, right? So if something's not fitting your use case, come ask. Maybe we figured out a way to make it fit its use case now. Maybe there's enough voices that can be heard that we can adjust whatever it is to fit your use case. And so like the VolenCon was really great. I don't want to shill for it too much, but it was a great place to meet everybody who cares about this stuff and really get involved and understand where the different stakeholders were coming from. And I hope it grows in that sense of where we get more and more people to use this to use everything and to contribute. Because it isn't open, it's volunteer, it's a federated effort. So let's all get together and make it better.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to go exactly there. CVE, CVSS, these are living bodies. These are communities. If you think something needs to change, get involved. CVE has working groups, where people can participate either, through community outreach or, on a technical level. Whatever you have to give or contribute, we're really open and we really welcome the extra hands. So, with that, I'll just say, Ben Edwards, Sander Vinberg, thank you so much for being on the CVE podcast. I really, this is one of my favorite podcasts. I love this. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks
Thanks
for
for
having
having
us.
us.
Thank you for joining us today on the We Speak CVE podcast, which is available for free on Buzzsprout and the CVE website. If you'd like to participate or suggest a topic, please contact us on the CVE website.